Welcome to Art for All, sponsored by Sketchbook School. As a thank you for joining us, I'd like to give you a free ebook and our monthly newsletter full of tips, recommendations, and other cool stuff. Just head over to sketchbookschool.com to claim your freebies and to learn more about our classes and workshops and our membership program. We believe that art is for everyone, and I hope our podcast inspires you to create and explore your own artistic journey. Thanks for listening. On with the show.
It genuinely seems like the days of selling your artwork because it is somehow visually special, those days got to be over. Because the things that are coming out of are remarkably interesting and beautiful looking.
Welcome to Art for All, a Sketchbook School podcast. I'm your host, Danny Gregory. I'm the author of a dozen or so books on art and creativity, and I'm a sketchbook artist, and I'm the founder of Sketchbook School. In each episode of Art for All, I invite a friend to talk about things that matter to us. It's the sort of unhurried conversation that we don't get enough of these days. I hope you'll enjoy it with us. Today, I'm going to be talking to Tom Hart. Tom is an award-winning cartoonist, a New York Times bestselling author, and the executive director of the Sequential Artists Workshop, or SAW, a school for cartooning and graphic novels. He's also taught at Sketchbook School. Tom is a smart and interesting person, and I learn so much every time we talk. And we can talk about just about anything. We discovered that we share an interest in AI, or artificial intelligence, particularly in how it applies to music, writing, and art making. Let's see where that goes.
Do you want to talk about the things we might want to talk about ahead of time, or just dig in?
Okay. Well, I thought one thing that could be of interest is to talk about grief. Uh-huh. It's always upbeat, always fun. We could talk about visual storytelling. We could talk about being a teacher.
Can we talk about AI?
It's so funny you said that because I was just thinking. I just clicked through to my email and I'm obsessed with DALL-E 2. But what you can do is you can upload your own image.
Oh.
So I upload a drawing and then it does its own version of my drawing. Which is super cool.
Let's talk about that.
Okay, we can talk about that. Yeah, I mean, what do you think? I played around with various AI writing programs, you know, and where you can sort of describe an idea and it will generate endless. I mean, it can write a novel. It can do all kinds of things. And I found it, like, reasonably useful. It didn't really particularly help me, but I find the visual thing it's just amazing to watch. I don't know how I feel about the final images, but it's just a staggering accomplishment. It's as if my dog walked in and started talking French. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, DALL-E 2 got real public, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks ago or maybe 2 months ago or something like that. It was really recent, right? It's so rapid, the changes. And just today, the one reason it's on my mind today is I saw a YouTube video about a guy who made a graphic novel in one day using only AI. And so he used the writing program. He typed in a bunch of parameters and things. It's about dog and this and that. And the writing AI spat out a bunch of prose, and he kept tweaking it, adding a little more. It would spit out more prose. And then this is pretty much one of the only few steps where he was really in charge. Is he took a bunch of that prose and organized it into an outline, trimming what he didn't like, keeping what he did like. And then he had a script, and from that script he just went to it's not DALL-E, it's Midjourney.
Yeah, Midjourney is another form of it. Yeah.
And he just spent the next couple hours generating images. And by the end of it, he put it all into Affinity Publisher. And by the end of it, he had a PDF ready to go to Blurb. And I desperately want a copy. It is very weird. It's really compelling looking. And I say that in a, like, I'm interested in the artwork and I'm interested in the mashup and all the incongruities, right? It doesn't look like it would move me in the way my favorite movies do or my favorite graphic novels do. But that's probably only a few years away. And that's what's striking to me is I really am feeling, I'm very, very curious about that AI stuff, but I'm also very, very curious about what are we doing as artists? What are we doing as humans? And I know, I believe that at your school, you're all about the practice. You're all about like sit down and just and play with watercolor and do it day after day or week after week and just let that inform, let that be a part of you. Let that be that, let that help create you, right? This practice of doing something. But the day, it genuinely seems like the days of selling your artwork because it is somehow visually special, those days got to be over because the things that are coming out of are remarkably interesting and beautiful looking.
I mean, are we at a point where artists were in, say, 1850, 1860, when, you know, photography was starting to come out, right? Late 19th century when Eastman brought out the first, you know, really available consumer cameras, and Impressionism comes about, right? So, right. Because basically artists say, well, we're not going to compete with cameras. We're going to create something completely new that's different. I mean, the question is, can we come up with something that AI can't come up with?
That's the question.
But I think really the way that people are talking about it now, it seems, is they're saying, our role as artists is to figure out how to play the AI, like how to inform it, how to curate it, how to guide it, and that it is just another tool.
That may be some artist role. I don't think I'm going to take up that role, even though I actually am using AI quite a bit. Like I've been blogging the past few months and I only illustrate it with AI imagery.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
but it's not because it's more about just wanting to document this time, because even AI, it's changing so fast that like the type of imagery I'm getting, I won't get forever because it's really weird and tweaky right now. And it's getting so much better that it'll get more consistently reliable and realistic and things like that. And I'm really excited by just how strange it looks right now, but it won't look that way forever. Someday I'll be nostalgic. And I think maybe we all will be nostalgic for when AI got things wrong.
like low res. Well, I don't think that it's getting it wrong. I think it's a purposeful limitation they've put on it. So for instance, eyes, right? Eyes are often like really messed up I find in a lot of things you generate. But then I was reading about,
I heard about
this one group that basically has put together an AI thing where they've taken away all limitations. Uh-huh. And so you can create like pornography, and you can create violent images, and you can create, you can take an image of a celebrity and have them, you know, killing somebody.
Yeah.
Whereas most of the platforms have put in roadblocks so that you can't do that kind of thing. But already, you know, once one person does it, then it's out there. It's loose, you know. And then the next thing they're going to do is video. That's supposedly months away. and they've also already done audio. So you can basically have anybody saying anything. Yeah.
You're right. So, to follow up what you're saying, like our job is to, as artists, is to curate it or work with it or something. I think I'm genuinely feeling my job is to like stay as far away from it as I can and gather a community of people and protect them somehow from the sinister and violent and troubling ways in which it's going to creep into our lives. I mean, it's just my sort of like, maybe it's a Luddite streak. Maybe it's more of a back to the farm kind of.
Well, I mean, or is it like, you know, think about like the era when digital music or at least like electronic music became more and more the mainstream. And, you know, you had like beds of synthesizers on everything. And then there was a movement towards acoustic, you know, and people playing ukuleles and things. So, so possibly, you know, we'll be drawing with dip pens and we'll regress and do cool stuff that really, but maybe human, I don't know. I mean, is Procreate another example of that? Like Procreate is a tool that we use to make art, and you can kind of simulate any effect, but obviously you still need a person to use it. I don't know.
I think Yeah, I mean, first of all, I just want to say the phrase, I'm going to try and lead the regression. The regression back to the, you know, back to the land, back to the analog, whatever. I want to be one of the...
Like derriere guard as opposed to avant-garde.
I got to write that down too.
Watch your ass. Yeah, but, I mean, I was just going to say about
Procreate. I think, you know, I think that is a really great tool. And what it's allowing is for a lot of people who have struggled with the tools of art making and communication of being of just a slightly or, you know, a little bit unsurmountable, Procreate has allowed them to make that leap. And I think it's almost entirely an empowering tool. I love seeing people come back with work from it. And, but yeah, so I don't know if that's not what we're talking about, I don't think.
Well, I mean, I feel like digital technology has entered into the world of comics in both good and bad ways over the last 25 years, right? I mean, to me, like inking, it seemed like it began with like coloring and inking. Uh-huh. And then you started having like everything had gradations on it and, you know, everything looked airbrushed. And a lot of the kind of charm to me of the old way of doing comics changed, and also the layouts and the design and obviously typography. There were just all these different things. Like, what was your feeling about it as it kind of entered more and more into making comics?
Well, I think I just didn't like it when it was garish, but I liked it when it wasn't. And now it's gotten to the point where I can't really tell. You know, like you said, it started with coloring and lettering. It probably started with lettering first. But that just got mechanical easily. So it was very easy to make what looked like comic book lettering, but it was maybe garish is the wrong word, but very customary. It looked very customary, and that didn't thrill me. So when I would see too much mechanical lettering, to me, it felt like this work would look better with hand lettering. That wasn't true with coloring. Coloring just went through phases, right? It goes through trends, right? There, you know, and some of it's technological. It was flat colors in the 50s and 60s and 70s because that's what was easy to print. As Baxter printing, they called it for a while, like enabled larger gradations and stuff. The people using mechanical flaps worked hard to adapt to it. And then the computers came and caught up, and then everybody added gradations and stuff. So that was a trend that was like a little garish, I think. But it's taste, you know, maybe some people love it. But honestly, it really comes down to taste. And if I don't like when things do look mechanical, unless that's the purpose. And a lot of times what people do when they're working with computers is they settle for the defaults. So if they open up Photoshop or Procreate or whatever, and it defaults to this type of font and this type of line spacing, especially, and this type of, balloon plate, you know, type of balloon and stuff, they just settle for the defaults. That bums me out, but it's not a big deal.
Is that in professional comic making, you mean? Or
I don't know what's professional and what's
well, there. As opposed to like a student who's like first making their things and they just kind of jump. I mean, there's so many apps now that you can that you can on an iPad easily make something that looks like a comic using photos and stuff like that.
Right.
So it's, you're not talking about that kind of thing. You're talking about something that's published.
I've seen work that is more more large scale and professional. Maybe it comes from a small publishing house or maybe even a big publishing house where the lettering just does look like they settled for all the defaults. And they didn't really think about the graphic design of a page, which involves the letters as much as the drawings. And it just bums me out because it's just another artistic choice you can make and you should make. I want to choose to letter it this way because it's the best thing for the story and the best thing for the ideas I'm trying to communicate.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always times when technology comes into the creative world and it makes work easier, right? Instead of it makes it easier to do it.
Certainly.
But it's really easy also to get lazy because you can, you know, you could apply a Photoshop filter to a photograph and have it look vaguely like a drawing. I mean, those kinds of things. But I think somehow deep inside us as human beings, we look at that kind of thing and we know, right? We know that this is not coming right, from the right place.
But that's the event horizon we're going to be passing through real soon, right? Where we're not really sure. You must know Dave McKeon, the artist, right? Who did all the covers to Sandman and stuff. He just published a book, which is already out of print, even though it's published it like last month, about his journey with AI. And one of the first things he did was he had an assignment for an album cover, and he had some ideas, and he typed those ideas into Midjourney. And he said the work that came out instantly in 2 minutes was as good as anything he would have done, and it looked like it was in his voice and style. And that's a really unique artist saying that about work, saying his own work was unrecognizable, or someone else's, or his work, the AI's work was recognizable as his. And so like if even somebody who, and he does have a pretty deep connection to his humanity, I think he's also a musician and all these things. I don't think he's just in it for the bucks. So I don't know. I think that was just a bit of a question about, I'm not so sure we're going to always know that whether or not something is false or not, if false is even the right word.
I was looking at this website this weekend. They took an image and they said, is it AI or is it a person or is it an illustrator? Uh-huh. So it showed you like 20 images in succession. Uh-huh. And I think I was 80% correct.
Uh-huh.
There are things I could see about it where I go like, the decisions that were made here are kind of insane. Like, no, a person wouldn't make these decisions, right? Uh-huh. And sometimes it would be a dead giveaway, like there'd be a book and the title would be like in the kind of gibberish letters that you see in a dream, you know, and you say, well, clearly that's like no illustrator would do that. But there were times where it was really, really difficult to tell. There's this thing that I read about where you can put in some kind of parameters and it will generate just music that's just constantly going, right? So you can just say, I want like, you know, these are the six variables. And then suddenly it's just basically like an endless mix of AI music. Could that happen with an amalgamation of storytelling where you could say, make me a comedy about chickens, and then it just generates a movie or it generates a novel or, and you just sort of absorb it. And
I'm 100% sure it will someday. Yeah. I think this was my thought this morning, is that the first people to lose their jobs, I don't like phrasing it that way. It seems not accurate, but we'll go with it. The first people to lose their jobs will be composers, film and TV composers. You know, a lot of those musicians have already lost their jobs unless they're in a strong union or something, you know, back in the day when even an episode of Star Trek in the 90s or something, they would bring out this mini orchestra and they would score the whole thing. And now they don't do it with real instruments, but they do it with a real composer. And that real composer probably pretty soon won't be necessary. And the producers, the people making the thing, and I mean, the producers who are the high up, who are the ones who own the content and who are, you know, who answer to the fans, they're going to want AI. I think.
I mean, I saw it because I was in advertising for years, and we would certainly, early in my career, we'd hire somebody to write a piece of music for, for a commercial. And then pretty soon they were bringing in basically what sounded like a final track that they had made alone in a keyboard. Mm-hmm. And then because it was advertising, we were always looking for ways to spend money. We would bring in real musicians to like double what the, you know, because it was like, that was unacceptable. We need to have a string section. So they bring in like four guys. Yeah. But another thing though, that was photography. So we always, you know, we spent a lot of money on photo shoots.
Yeah.
And not just hiring a photographer, but also going and overseeing it if you have a product shot. And now it's become stock photography. Whereas in my day in advertising, there was stock photography, but you would never use it because it would be horrible, you know.
Right.
But now stock photography is really broadly available and also incredibly cheap.
Yeah,
I use stock photography almost every day.
And so, good quality.
Yeah, it's good quality, but Now, the next thing, of course, is AI stock photography, you know, so because you can, you know, particularly like, because, I mean, there's settings in AI where you can say, shoot it as if it was, you know, commercial tabletop glamour food photography, you know, those kinds of things. And also another thing is you can, of course, set in the style. And you can set in the style. You can say, I want it to be shot like this particular photographer, just like you can with an Illustrator. So I think photography is already, photography is already screwed, but now even more so.
But let's open up that can of worms a little, because I'm really curious about how we're going to go forward as humans. And to some degree, it's really going to help. What matters to some degree is our governing bodies. Because what am I getting at? Let me backtrack. What you just described at the advertising agency is really fun. I was in advertising and public relations too. And it was a blast to have a recording, a day where you're in the recording studio, or a photo shoot day, or any number of other creative projects. And so, we had the luxury of spending money, right? But it was partially because it's such a thrill to make art. And so there's going to be some forces that are saying, no, do it as cheaply as possible, because it's a product and it's selling a product, and et cetera, et cetera. So where do we take those impulses to make art and to collect, you know, and to do it in groups too, right? You know, if it's a photo shoot, you got three or four people in the room, and it's you know, you got the set dresser. It's a great creative collaborative project. I guess I'm saying, I think people were going to have to figure out how to find those safe places where we can make art safe from market forces. I don't know.
Here's a thought that I was having while you were describing that. If you think about, humans have created art and music and various other things forever, right?
Sure.
So it's only really in the last couple hundred years, or let's say maybe since the Renaissance, that there have been people who are professional makers of art, mm-hmm. right? And if you think about music in the 19th century, it was sheet music. And, mm-hmm. you know, you would buy the latest songs from Tin Pan Alley, and you would play them on the piano, and everybody would gather around and sing together. And that was music making. Yeah, there are some people whose job that was, but music was still something that we all did.
Right.
I think that's, when you go back to what you were talking about before with sketchbook school, I think the process of making art is really fun. Mm-hmm. And it's not about the result. So, yes, I could get an AI to do a much better version of a drawing of my dog, but I wouldn't have the experience of what it's like to draw my dog. Exactly. That's a completely human experience. So maybe what it is that there will be certain kinds of creative people, humans, that create certain kinds of art, but there will also be AIs creating huge amounts of stuff for us. And then there'll be human art activities that we can all do. And, you know, I mean, a lot of professions will go away. Right. They will go away, but the people won't go away. Those creative people will still be there. And because they're creative people, they'll come up with other things to do and other ways of making money. And, you know, it's fine. It's just like there are fewer trades of certain kinds that have gone away, but they've been replaced by other things. So maybe it's not a bad thing. Maybe it's actually going to make art into what it should be, which is a human activity disconnected from commerce.
I agree with that. With a little bit of trepidation about whether or not we all get like shoveled under the landslide of everything being automated. So long as we can like persist and exist, then I think what you just described is great. You know, where we,
but you may not be able to be a professional graphic novelist.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you are because your stories still are human and come from your experience. So
I think it'll be pretty niche. Like, I don't know. I mean, you know, publishing is changing so dramatically anyway. It's barely hanging on. And although it's barely hanging on from the strength of people very dedicated, you know, so mm-hmm. people are still earning advances and they're still publishing a large number of books a year in hopes that one will hit. And the editors and publishers are mostly behind those books. But in the future, when the AI is writing equally good books, even in a literary fiction genre, you know, even in something that seems arty, then it's really going to be hard, I think. And in which case, I don't know, we just make art and make stories for each other. We find a group and trade amongst ourselves. I don't know where it's going. I don't know.
I mean, look, publishing, the majority of books that are published right now are not published by publishers anymore.
Right.
Publishers by individuals, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know, maybe it becomes like going to the ballet or going to a concert, you know, that it's, that they're human experiences.
Right.
And then there's other kinds of experiences.
Right.
You know?
Right. And it should be, yeah. I mean, I actually hadn't thought of that analogy, but I think theater is a great analogy because at the moment it is, you cannot remove the human experience from it. Like you go there and you're in an audience and the people on the stage are real and they're in front of you and they're having the exact same moment you're having, where we're all sharing that moment. And yeah, maybe things that we're used to being just products like books, postcards and other things, maybe that is when they're human, they do become more of a theatrical event or something.
I guess so. But maybe it's also that you'll be able to put on like your VR helmet and have that experience. At home.
Yeah. To have the experience of what? Of
being being in a theater, you know, but you're actually in the metaverse. And,
you know, I mean, it's tricky now. We're definitely out of my league right now, but I know I play like, Roblox with my daughter and it's a shared world, right? And she and I are in different devices and it's pretty amazing. And I'm playing with other people who, you know, they're probably children out who knows where. And some of those experiences have been actually pretty profound. I had one game where I was playing, where I was role playing a bird, a little parakeet. It was extremely profound and weird. And so, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe there's a lot of the metaverse to be talked about or to be looked forward to, I guess.
But just to go back to where we were before, I think that isn't the core of art the human experience? Isn't it about, it's not about just the execution. It's not about the technique. It's not about whether you can draw it to look like this or that.
Right.
It comes down to like who we are, what we've experienced, what we want to say to other people.
Yeah.
Like, is that really something that AI can ever simulate?
Well, let's describe two different audiences, right? There are the audiences who are going to buy a book or a painting or whatever other kind of music because they like it, right? Because they groove on it. It really appeals to them. They don't care whether it's AI or human. And then there's the second kind of audience that want human experiences, that want, and I've gotten more this way. I don't know if you have as you run your school for so many years, but I've gotten this way where I prefer, here, I have them right here, even though I know we won't show this to the audio, but I prefer books that look like this these days, that are very hand-drawn and hand-folded. Yeah, and like this thrills me. Again, it's back to the earth. It's banjo and whatever we were talking about, dulcimer playing, you know. And so these are very human little products or human little artifacts or something. I'm not sure what to call them. And the act of drawing a dog is a really profound thing if you are really there with that dog for that couple of minutes. And it's lovely to share. Hey, look at this drawing I made of my dog while I sat and sort of meditated with this dog for a couple of minutes. And then I share one with you and we share, and nobody makes any money, but it's a really delightful human experience. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what you're saying, right?
I think so. I mean, I think what I'm saying is that maybe creative things, creative endeavors are less about scarcity and less about,
right.
you know,
right.
professionalization and skill. And they are more just about, you know, humanity and human experiences. And, I mean, cause if you think about the speed with which this is happening, what will it be like 50 or 100 years from now? You know, what will a generation that have this their whole life think about making these things. I mean, hopefully we'll still be around. Hopefully there won't be, you know, flooding and 200-degree temperatures. But but given that we will, you know, still be around in some form, maybe we'll still always crave that human connection.
I think we will. What I'm worried about is how difficult it's going to be to get people involved in the arts if
they can't make a living.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna have to get used to that. But also, like, if I'm surrounded by art by AI, and it's all beautiful, and I say, "Look, mommy, I did this," but I look all around me and all the AI art, which comes out in 2 minutes, and I've already, since I was three, have been typing things into DALL-E or whatever, and like, can I get comfortable with the large learning curve? Not even learning curve, but just like, you know, the quirkiness that a human has when it makes art, especially in early stages. Will we be able to get over that disappointment that it doesn't look like the stuff we're seeing everywhere?
But we can say that now about photography. And
well, we can.
And what about like kids learning to play musical instruments? So you have like the Suzuki method or whatever, where you have kids who are 3 years old learning to play violin.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's the point of that? I mean, you could just buy a record. Download, a recording of Beethoven string quartet. I mean, why do we need people to learn this stuff? Because it's a human experience, right? That's profound, that teaches us discipline, that gives us appreciation, all those kinds of things that come from making art that enrich life.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Just like, otherwise, we would all like just eat like microwave, you know, food substitute substance. I mean, we can mechanize every aspect of the human experience, but I don't think we want to. I mean, that's ultimately the choice we do have to have. We don't have to have the government say, you're not allowed to make images that look like stuff. But we can say, as people, we're just, you know, we want to continue to maintain certain parts of things in under our control and under our creativity.
Yeah, I think I completely agree. I think I'm a little bit worried because our tendency as humans or as Westerners or as capitalists or something is to mechanize everything. It's to not be concerned with the environment, with anything. You know, how convenient can I make it for you? Let's get it to you as quickly as possible. Figure out the markup, get it. And I just went on an anti-capitalistic rant and lost my own train of thought. But so I think I just mean we need to be vigilant and we're going to have to get used to saying no pretty often. Like, no, I don't want that kind of experience. I want the human experience. You know, no, I don't want this book that's been created by an AI. You know, I've got that way with like, no, I don't want a movie created by committee. You know, I've never seen any of those Marvel movies. Like, I think I've seen about half an hour of like the X-Men or something because they're so committee driven and they're so profit driven, and the book and the comics themselves were so profit driven. Sorry, I've just alienated half the audience who loves Marvel movies. But part of what I'm saying is I would rather it be much smaller, much more human. I would rather know what your sister-in-law made on her video this weekend, you know, or something like that. I'd much rather see something honest and earnest like that.
I think we're already seeing that with what is that new platform called? Be Real. Do you know Be Real?
I've heard of it once or twice. What is it exactly?
So Be Real is like, it's almost like the early version of Instagram. Uh-huh. So basically what it is you sign up, you connect with your social network, and then at a certain time of day, you get an alert that says, take a picture right now of where you are and what you're doing. And so basically, like, you can't curate it. There are no filters. You can't. It's just like, boom, what are you doing right now? And so it's a way of stripping away artifice and saying, let's just connect and tell each other the truth about what we're doing. And it's very popular, I think, for that reason, because it's almost like when you give people all the possible tools and and you give them the Marvel movies of the world, they go back and say, you know what, I want to watch a Charlie Chaplin film, or I want to go and watch, you know, something that's an independent film made by a small team.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're always going to fluctuate. We don't want to just eat McDonald's all the time, but we might want to eat McDonald's occasionally. So I have faith in humanity, you know, that naive as that may be, because I feel like on one hand, when we make it really easy for ourselves, a lot of us do just go there, you know, and we drive in automatic, and we assume we won't be driving at all because we'll have self-driving cars everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe it'll be like WALL-E, you know, where we're all, you know, weigh 400 pounds and we're sitting around in bark loungers with VR helmets on all the time.
Right.
And if so, then maybe we deserve to become extinct. But maybe not. Maybe we're better than that. And, you know, we're not – just because you can buy candy doesn't mean you eat only candy. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we are – and I think people do like to put themselves into difficult situations, right? We like to stress ourselves. We like to take away the things that make life easy in order to appreciate better the things that we do have.
True.
I don't know. I don't think we're going to come to a conclusion, but I'm always optimistic, as I know you are too.
It's eroding a little, let's say, my optimism. But I stand on the same side you do. Like, I really just I like the people around me. I like the human experience. I like seeing what people do. I like being a part of what we all do together, you know.
We don't want to become like old cranks. Well, back in my day, we used to sharpen pencils ourselves,
yeah,
you know.
I know.
Why, we had paper when I was a boy, and now look at you people with your... Yeah, so
we can
hopefully that's not the case, that we're not just cranky old Luddites. I love technology. I always have, so.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
I just ordered an iPad because I was, and it hasn't even come yet. Like, it's, I keep checking my mail. Has it come yet?
You've never had an iPad till now?
No, it's not that. I had one right before the pandemic. We bought one for the school with the pencil. And then the pandemic hit, and I thought, like, well, I'm going to be holed up in the house for a while. Let me see how this works. I didn't like it much, but I also knew that it was just me. So I gave it to Emma, who runs the school with me. And, you know, I've got some other iPad that is super ancient. It can't even run half the programs it's trying to run anymore. But meanwhile, I've been doing these comics in ink through the pandemic and a little before, and having a great time of it. But about the past 6 or 8 months, I've been really slow and kind of stuck, and couldn't figure out why. And then I realized, like, oh, it's because my medium is stopping me. It's like, it's a little too laborious to get the ink ready and to dip the pen and all that stuff. And my ideas are a little too frequent. Like, and so that disconnect is starting to appear. And so the first thing I did was I got out a cheap marker and I started inking with that instead, because I have been a real purist about ink, and that was a blast. And then I said, I'm just going to do this thing I've been threatening to do for a couple of years, which is try Procreate again. So I'm waiting for it to start, but I know for a fact this time it'll take, because the rationale is there. I sort of know this world I've created, and I'm really happy with it. And I know that there's a lot more waiting to unfold, but it needs to unfold more quickly. And I know that the computer will aid it. So I'm really excited. Maybe tomorrow I'll have an iPad.
That's exciting. I can't wait to see what you do with it. And I find in general with Procreate, I'm much more playful than with anything else.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the colors. I don't know if it's just like how nice the pencil feels on the glass. But I just find like I make much wackier things. And
right.
You know, I still draw all the time in watercolor on paper, but really the wilder stuff that I made has always been on Procreate. So I hope you have the same
experience. That must feel good. Both those things must feel good, right? To do watercolor and to make these wild things on Procreate. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I started with Procreate, I was trying to simulate analog things. So I spent like a lot of time trying to figure out like, how do I do watercolor exactly? How do I make something look like a dip pen? And then I just, one day I said, you know what? This has nothing to do with that. Don't use it for that. Use it for what it is. And, you know, it's like you make these images and you get colors that you can't possibly get in any, I mean, it's stained glass, right? It's light coming through color. It's incredible looking. And particularly if ultimately what you're making is something that's going to be, people are going to look at on the iPad, or they're going to look at on a computer screen, then it makes sense. You know, it's not going to, Because invariably when you print it, it's sort of like, meh. You know? But actually, these pictures were right behind me. A lot of them are from the iPad, so.
It's kind of blurry, but yeah, that's cool.
I keep them that way, because if you saw them well, you'd be like, they're not that good, actually. But,
but again, that's like the experience of making them is what mattered.
Yeah, and, I have a lot of fun with it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're in a situation where you can share that fun. You can share that experience. Like, here's how to have fun and feel good while using Procreate. And that's a fantastic place to be in.
That's true. Well, I hope you have fun.
I'm going to go through that phase you just described, though, I know for a fact. I don't know how long it'll last where I will be trying to replicate what I do in Ink. And at some point, I will have that brain, you know, that brainstorm like, oh, dummy, this is, treat this like something different. I don't know. It might, it's okay. I know that that phase is waiting for me. Might be a month, might be a couple.
Yeah. I mean, there are companies that make tools that are designed to make old school analog looking things on Procreate.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure you know about them too. So you can go in that direction, but to me, it was always like, why not just make something different? So, yeah. All right, cool. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me about what I didn't think we were going to chat about. I'm interested in a lot of things, and I don't actually know anybody who's interested in them the way I am. So I'm glad to know that now I can at least bug you about AI periodically.
Oh, I'm really, really interested in it. And it's a mixture of fear and awe and delight and fear. Did I mention fear?
And delight.
All these things. So, reach out anytime.
I love talking to Tom. I hope you enjoyed it too. If you'd like to learn more about his work and his school, visit tomhart.net. I'll add his website in the show notes and in the description on YouTube. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time with more Art for All. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. And remember, visit sketchbookschool.com and claim your free ebook and your monthly newsletter. Our community is always growing, and we'd love for you to be a part of it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Art for All.